I think Itasca is a model that suits everyone at some point in their life, you know, whether it's doing jobs for people or helping people or getting things done. And what we definitely found was where the business really started to grow faster was actually in the early days. It was quite tough, the first 6 to 12 months. We ended up doing a lot of jobs for people, actually, you know, cleaning people's homes and driving around picking up food for people. But I think it definitely was the arrival of Uber and Airbnb in Australia as well around 2014, where initially before those two businesses were in Australia, people thought Airtasker was a crazy idea. Then with the arrival, I think, of Airbnb, for example, it was around finding people to come sleep in your bed and giving them the keys to your house. And I think that kind of catapulted the idea of Airtasker forward, because it was no longer that crazy to get someone just to pick up groceries and drop it off. You know, Airbnb became the crazy one and we became the obvious one.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent, and I'm joined this week once again by Mark Edwards.
Hey, Sam, great to be back. And I'll tell you what this podcast did to me. What? It actually took me back to a place that I love in the world.
Yeah, Singapore.
Singapore.
Yeah. Today's guest is Jonathan Louie, who is the founder of Soho App and the co-founder of one of my favourite apps, Airtasker.
Mm-hmm.
We've used a lot of Airtaskers in our time, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely.
It's one of the hacks of a small entrepreneurial business.
Exactly. Whether it's getting somebody in here to, as we fondly refer to it, as doing stamp licking for getting extra out the door,
yep.
or even for getting helpers up at conferences like at ARIC, just to be able to stuff show
bag
bags.
Stuffer.
Yeah, bag stuffer.
Yep. I mean, Airtasker, you can hire plumbers, handymen, all that sort of stuff, which is pretty interesting. So Jonathan is currently based in Singapore and he is the founder of Soho App, which is interesting. So you know what it reminded me a little bit of, and we talk about this in podcast, is it reminded me a little bit of Follow It, which is still taking a break from following, I think, for the rest of time. But moving right along. Yeah, so interestingly, like on Soho, you can follow various properties and various people and things like that. And it's free to use. And, you know, like it occurred to me last year, you know, well, what would happen if you put Soho and Airtasker together with a property in the middle?
You flagged that with Jonathan during the conversation, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a very interesting answer, but you'll have to listen to find out.
Absolutely. I think Jonathan also spoke about a lot of other aspects in the business, and particularly with where it's come from and where he sees it going. I think some of the interesting conversations he was having, though, was on culture throughout the conversation.
Yep. And the other thing, too, is the whole idea of, it's not a new idea, but the matchmaking aspect of real estate. So, matching people and property at the right place at the right time. So we've called this podcast The Real Estate Matchmaker, and maybe that's what Jonathan intends, maybe not, but it's an interesting lesson.
Lots of takeaways on this one, particularly with how to lead teams, how to, as I said before, how to actually instill a great culture into a team. He's gone from the start of Airtasker, even to the point where, he was doing some of the tasks himself with his founder until it got to that critical mass. There's a lot of learnings in there for the budding entrepreneur in being able to get to that point of success.
Yeah, and also some good pointers, I think, once again, if you open your mind to the possibilities of creativity in things like property management, there's a good few hints here as to where that may all go.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of takeaways. As I said, lots of takeaways, lots of tips. All went into the show notes. So visit eliteagentelevate.com to get your hands on the show notes that Sam's taken. Or alternately, if you'd like to have all of the show notes, including the award-winning Elite Agent magazine, delivered to your door, become a pro member, eliteagent.com/pro.
Well said. So that's it. I think it's time to get on with the show.
On with the show.
Welcome to the podcast, Jonathan Louie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we've caught you somewhere between Sydney and Singapore. So you spend time in Sydney as well as in Asia. Where are you at the moment?
Yeah, so I moved up to Singapore about 3 years ago now. Time really flies. It hasn't felt that long, but I think it's because I've been going back to Australia so often. So I'm back almost every month, actually. Still have a lot of my family there, but my wife and her family is up in Singapore. So good to go back every now and then, stay connected to Australia.
Absolutely. So you've got a couple of interesting businesses here in Australia. Soho in particular is really gaining some ground, but you also were one of the founders of Airtasker, which we're all pretty familiar with. So I'm pretty keen just to get a bit of background on you. How did you end up thinking of that idea? And number two is, where is Airtasker at the moment?
Yeah, so I guess I had a relatively corporate career. I started at IBM straight out of uni. I wanted to go traveling, but I ended up getting jobs. So I that often worked there for about close to 4 years and then joined a startup called Amazon, which is now one of the large telcos, but in the early days was just a handful of us working on that business. And, you know, telco was a relatively straightforward business. It's a great business, except we were doing an online SIM virtual operator, basically. So we didn't really have retail stores like an Optus or Telstra. So it's a great experience and learning from some really experienced founders. And I guess it came to a point where probably about 2 years into the business, and I was looking to get the new iPhone that was launching. I think at the time it was iPhone 4. And I was thinking, this would be great. I work in telco. I should be able to get a great deal through Apple and through distributors. And basically, these are the times, I think, still of Steve Jobs. And basically, the answer came down that, no, you can't get access to it. You got to line up like everyone else at the Apple store. And I thought that, wow, that's you know, I don't want to line up there for 24 hours. I mean, it's snakes around the block. And I was thinking, I'd pay someone to do that for me and then just do the old switcheroo and go and get the iPhone. And it was fortunately one of my friends who was working with me, Tim, was also moving at the time. He was thinking, you know, maybe I should ask some guys to help me move. And I thought I got better things to do with my time. So, but it'd be great if you could pay someone to help you do that. And I guess that just started getting us thinking around, you know, there must be millions of Australians in this same kind of situation every day looking for some help. Not necessarily because we're lazy or anything like that. It's just that you need someone, you know, you want someone to do something for you. And there was no platform to connect people online to do that. So I guess that was kind of the origination of the idea. And fortunately, you know, the whole gig economy concept started really taking off, you know, ever since we started around 2012. So that was, I guess, the rise of that business and that business model. Yeah, it's flourishing today.
Yeah, well, we've used Airtasker quite a bit, actually. Every time we do a show in a different city, we hire some employees on Airtasker just to help stuff show bags. And,
that's great.
You know, it's actually pretty cool. How many people are registered on Airtasker now, either as people that are requesting jobs or people that are able to fulfill jobs?
So we have over 2 million people now on the platform. We also launched UK and I believe Ireland as well. Our first kind of foray into international destinations. But I guess as you know, experience, there are scenarios not only in, you know, different cities as you're moving around, but even different countries. And it's a great platform because it's two-way, you know, there's people who need things done and there are people who are happy to do things for you as well. So it really services both sides of the market and it's very organic and very fluid.
It's an interesting idea because these days, thinking about it, you know, like when I left school, I had to have a particular career in mind and you always worried that if you didn't have a job, then you're in big trouble. But I think Airtasker and businesses like it anyway has really changed how people view employment. I mean, Uber's a similar thing. Like if I ever found myself out of work, I think the first thing I'd do is I'd put myself on Airtasker and say, I can edit videos or I can write for people and stuff like that. I think it's really definitely changed things.
Absolutely. I think Airtasker is a model that suits everyone at some point in their life, you know, whether it's doing jobs for people or helping people or getting things done. And what we definitely found was where the business really started to grow faster was actually in the early days, it was quite tough, the first 6 to 12 months. We ended up doing a lot of jobs for people, actually, you know, cleaning people's homes and driving around picking up food for people. But I think it definitely was the arrival of Uber and Airbnb in Australia as well around 2014, where initially, before those two businesses were in Australia, people thought Airtasker was a crazy idea. You know, it's like, how could you get someone to do cleaning, you know, through an app? Some random person online, you know, maybe an online profile with only a couple of reviews. Then with the arrival, I think, of Airbnb, for example, it was around finding people to come sleep in your bed and giving them the keys to your house. And I think that kind of catapulted the idea of Airtasker forward, because it was no longer that crazy to get someone just to pick up groceries and drop it off. You know, Airbnb became the crazy one and we became the obvious one.
Yeah, interesting. How did you know that it was going to be a winner? Like back in those early days when you said you interestingly did some of the work yourself, at what point did you actually feel, okay, this is really going to take off?
I think, you know, hard to say whether we knew it was going to be a winner. I think we had ambition and belief, a faith that, you know, this was the right way. I mean, we had seen other models around before, you know, obviously like a Gumtree classifieds model. And then all the way up to, in the US, there was a TaskRabbit model, which is a bit more around managed and hired services. They would do a lot of the hiring and qualification and training. And we thought, you know, there are huge businesses that have been successful that kind of sit in the middle. One of those obviously being eBay. You know, they don't do any training, or they don't tell you what you can sell. They just say, here's a great platform to sell. And I guess we kind of modeled ourselves very much on the eBay platform, saying, look, we don't have the resource to go and train people anyway. We can't guarantee that a cleaning service is always going to be the same as every other cleaning service that you get on Airtasker. I would say that it was, you know, a bit of ambition and just blind faith, you know, that it was going to work. But I guess when we started seeing a lot of people dedicating themselves to Airtasker was realizing that it really changed their lives in terms of becoming a real livelihood for them. And that also helped to spur other opportunities that we didn't think of when we started. For example, insurance. When you do an Airtasker job in the early days, if you broke your leg, for example, it might be hard to maybe claim some kind of compensation in terms of, you know, you've just lost a primary source of income. In those days, as we mentioned, it was still a kind of crazy idea. Today, it's different. You know, there are clear verticals for insurance for the gig economy. And we really helped drive a lot of that because we saw people making a lot of money from this as their primary source of income. And so we started approaching insurance companies to say, you know, this is a new opportunity and we think it needs to be serviced by insurers and it's going to be great for our workers.
Where do you see the gig economy going in the future?
It definitely is going to keep on growing. You know, the concept is there and it's much more than a concept now. It's very much a practicality of the world. So I would say that it might have lost a bit of its sheen and its sexiness in terms of it's not necessarily the cool and the shiny new toy at the moment. You know, 5 years ago it was, you know, with the rise of Ubers and Airtaskers and so on. So now it's more about the maturity phase of the industry around talking about, okay, there are some other things you need to consider now, like, you know, workers, you know, insurance protections as well. You know, we had conversations with the unions as well to understand, you know, what they did. Definitely from my perspective, I was quite naive as to what they did for the labor industry, I guess, and then learning a lot more about why they're there and what their goals are. It helps me really understand, you know, how is that going to work in an age where services are online, you know, profiles and identities are online, and the gig economy isn't a cool thing anymore. It's just a part of a way of life. So yeah, it definitely has a lot of room to grow, I think. And now you're seeing these services around the gig economy starting to really take off.
So let's talk about your latest adventure, which is the Soho app, which has been around for a couple of years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, just about 2 years.
Yeah. So how did you, first of all, come up with the idea for Soho? And for people that aren't familiar with it, can you explain a little about what it does?
Yeah, so I guess it came when I moved up to Singapore and I was thinking about, okay, what am I going to do in Singapore? Should I start another business or maybe take a bit of a break and relax a bit? As part of that process, we sold our home to move up here. And that was probably the first time I kind of went through the sales process on a real estate perspective. It was interesting. I guess I started looking at that industry and saying, you know, not that it was broken and not that it wasn't working, but it was working a certain way that was, in a way, I thought quite legacy, you know, it's around you pay enormous fees to put your property, you know, effectively your content, your opportunity online. You're paying for the privilege to do that, but you're putting it on someone else's website. And I guess that was a transition of the same business model, but from the newspaper to online. So I felt that that was done successfully, you know, by the early disruptors of the day, which would have been, say, real estate and domain. But the next step from that to a much more all-encompassing real estate platform hadn't happened yet. So I guess the way we look at how we describe Soho is as the LinkedIn of real estate. So effectively, we're trying to do the same thing to the real estate sector that LinkedIn has done to the paid classifieds jobs sector. In saying that, so our platform has a marketplace, property is completely free to list, but we marry the best of a marketplace with the best of social networking. So there is more than just properties to find on Soho. There is profiles, there's content, you know, news from people who are actually in the industry on the ground selling properties all every single day. There's also groups and communities. What's different as well is users create profiles on Soho. They use that profile to maybe optimize their search results as well as connect with other people. And I think it's around as a property seeker, someone who's looking to buy or rent property, you know, it's not a decision that's made over a weekend. You know, there's a lot of research that goes into it. You want to speak to experts. And it's great to read articles that might be written, let's say, on a real estate or domain, and those can be posted in Soho as well. But when you think about it, these journalists who write these articles, they probably haven't actually sold properties in their life, right? They're not, wouldn't be necessarily considered experts in that area of Lane Cove or North Sydney. And I guess what we're trying to do is give that voice to those professionals, you know, whether they're agents, listing agents, buying agents, mortgage brokers, servicing those areas and really helping you do what it is trying to do, which is buy your dream home. So I guess that's the vision of a real estate ecosystem that is much more than just property listings, but we are experiencing a lot of growth, definitely on the property listing side. A lot of these agents and vendors are bringing cross properties into our ecosystem because it's free to use. And there's a thriving ecosystem there.
Yeah, so I have noticed that you are partnering directly with some of the big franchise groups to get their listings onto the platform. Let's say we're onboarding a group of agents. What are some of the things that you would tell them that are the advantages of getting onto the platform as well as being in other places that they need to be?
Yeah, I think there are a few key advantages for agents. One is it's a completely free platform to use, so they're able to effectively multi-tenant their listings. And I think from a vendor perspective, because they work for their vendors, that makes sense, you know, to attract as many leads as possible. So that's an advantage to get the listings in straight away. The other advantage is our users are all qualified users. So, you know, you join the platform, it's very qualified in terms of saying, where are you looking to buy? How much do you want to spend? How do you identify yourselves, you know, as an investor, as an owner or a buyer? So these are fully qualified online profiles, which agents can browse when they get the inquiry or they get the interest, then they can have a look at that. And then they know how to cater that conversation when that buyer walks through the door. We also are a publishing portal. So I guess it's around today, agents will, I guess it's around obviously marketing a message and they're using some channels which are available to them. Let's call it email databases, maybe flyering letterboxes, maybe putting some content on Facebook and LinkedIn. But when you think about those channels, none of them are really online ecosystems and none of them are really focused on real estate. You know, Facebook's for your friends, LinkedIn is for your colleagues and potentially your competitors. So it's great to put up, you know, a result, say, you know, just sold a place, $200,000 over reserve and post that to LinkedIn. And I'm sure you're going to get some likes and engagement. But I guess from an agent perspective, what you're trying to do is drive business, right? You want to find the next customer or you want to find the next sale. And those channels may not be 100% aligned. So what we're trying to do is try to bring that and give it a home online in Soho, not just as a portal to put up your properties and your opportunities, but also to publish your content, build a reputation and build your online identity.
So I guess it's an additional service. So if I've got my buyer database, for example, in the office and I've got a property where I'm not too sure if I have the right person on my database, then I could look at Soho, for example, to see who is on there and possibly pre-qualify them.
Yes, yeah, definitely. This is where, you know, a lot of agents and agencies will have a proprietary database, you know, an email database that they've built up maybe over many years. The difference with email databases is that I would describe them as, you know, constantly eroding assets in a way. You know, there's a lot of spam filtering that goes on. So a lot of your emails don't even get sent to users. Then a lot of them don't get opened. And a lot of those contacts might be stale. You know, there might be a buyer that you spoke to 4 years ago. Maybe they don't live in the country anymore. I still get calls from agents saying, you know, are you looking to buy? I'm like, I don't live in Australia anymore right now. Whereas the online identity is, you know, it's live, it's can be updated anytime. I guess from our perspective, we can help identify the right buyers for your property as well. We send out a lot of property alerts to thousands of buyers every single day. So when you put your opportunity up, we're proactively telling people about that as well. The right buyers are really trying to drive attention to the opportunities that they have. And I guess it's the, analogous to the LinkedIn methodology where, you know, LinkedIn was about building this online network and they started small. You know, they were smaller than Seek when they came to Australia, but they've grown such that that network is a single network rather than each recruiter and each company having their own proprietary databases of emails and stale CVs that weren't getting updated. So I guess it's where we're in effect trying to mirror exactly what they've done just for real estate.
Yeah, interesting. And so how are you attracting consumers onto the platform?
Yeah, so I guess the good thing is, you know, we come from experience backgrounds of building technology and building an audience. And so a lot of our techniques revolve around, you know, good marketing strategies, whether it's search engine optimization or paid marketing, but also around building a great product to retain customers and giving them value propositions on why they should be coming back. You know, for example, one of the products we released recently, we call it effectively like the Tinder of real estate. It's a really nice interaction to put in a few settings of what you're looking for. And we will be able to make suggestions to you based on algorithms around what you're interested in, what you've interacted with before, maybe on the quality of the listing as well. We can make suggestions. And interestingly, we're not only able to see what a properties a person is interested in, but also what properties people aren't interested in. And that's quite powerful to understand what is the live demand indicator for a property or a suburb, or maybe even comparing two properties that are in the same building, but one property has a 30% demand indicator and the other property has a 10% demand indicator. So understanding what is the difference between those two properties and giving that information back to agents and their vendors to make a decision around that, which is going to affect the financial outcome for that client.
So that's interesting. So the demand indicator, so how do you figure out what the demand is for each property?
Well, the good thing is we gather that information from the interactions on the property. So whether someone likes the property or maybe they put it in the maybe bucket, which is saying I'm on the fence, I might have a look at it in another week or so. Or they say, you know, this property, it's in the area I'm looking for, it's the right price, but I don't like it. And we start gathering more and more information around that, aggregating that and understanding, you know, why do people not like this property? Is it the view is not as good? Maybe the bathroom's small? Maybe the presentation was not great? So we do look at employing some AI techniques there as well to understand what is it about these properties that are giving these signals to buyers and renters, whether they're interested or not interested. And as you can imagine, that's around, you know, gathering more and more data and providing that back to our customers. We're effectively agents and agencies and franchise groups to say, here are some things that we're seeing. You know, you can have access to this data. Maybe you want access to more data to improve the service you're providing to your clients.
Yeah, I imagine that demand index would be very valuable to an agent because then they'd be able to definitely either sort of use that as evidence to get a premium price, whether it be renting or purchasing.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say a data life agent, there's kind of two numbers that I really focus on right now, which is just the start from our opinion, but that is, you know, how many views did your opportunity get and how many inquiries did you get? But there is a big disconnect between the views and the inquiries. You might get 1,000 views and 10 inquiries. What happened to the 990 other people? What did they think about your property? And that's where I guess Soho is quite a powerful platform in that you know, because we are more alike to a LinkedIn or a Facebook than we are to a real estate or domain. You know, it's a network, it's an online community, you have profiles, and we're able to capture some of that data to give even more signals to the agents around, well, we put in front of 100 potential buyers. These are buyers which we know factually would be interested in your kind of opportunity. 60 of them said they're not interested, 30 said they are interested, and 10 are sitting on the fence. That's an additional 40 opportunities that you can tap into right now, or at the very minimum, understand that Andrew Smith likes your properties, your property he's going to walk through this Saturday. Now at least you can cater that conversation. You know, Andrew Smith may not have inquired on this property because the listing was so good that it had all the information they needed to make a decision to come. So for us, it's around capturing that information, and that's information that no one else has, and it's very powerful to help, I guess, guide their client.
I remember something that was launched a couple of years ago in a big fanfare at ARIC that had, you could follow properties. I think it was called Follow It. And so with Soho, are you able to follow pretty much any property on the map this way, or does it have to be, does somebody have to press a button somewhere to say, okay, this property is, you know, if someone was interested in it, I want to know about it?
Yeah, so we allow you to engage with the content in many ways. You can, you know, follow an agent, you can follow a group, you can follow a topic. You're effectively following an area, but when you set up your interests and saying, well, because we know you like this area, we can suggest content to you, whether it's properties or people or articles or posts that are getting posted. So we had a great chat with the Follow It team. You know, I guess they, you know, had a good run at it. And I think at this point, they weren't able to build the vision that they had. And there was a lot of learnings from the team that they were happy to share with us around why they weren't able to succeed there. And I think it really came down to a few things. You know, one of them maybe being execution on technology. They weren't necessarily coming from a technological background. And in our industry, that's really important. It's like if you were doing a property development and you came from maybe a food and beverage industry, right? You'd find that very difficult to understand all the bells and whistles around getting DAs, getting engineering, and doing all the plumbing and then obviously building it. There'd be a lot of learning curves there. And I guess for us, you know, in terms of deploying great online platforms, you know, we had that strength. And so for us, it was never, the business wasn't around just creating a following concept. It was much more about building an ecosystem, and being able to follow was a feature within that platform, but it wasn't the be all and end all feature of the platform.
You just mentioned too that it's free to put your listings onto the platform. How do you monetize the platform if it's free for agents?
Yeah, so the way we monetize is we're building this great network of data and I guess buyers and renters and owners on the platform. And much in the same way that with LinkedIn, you can upgrade to a premium account. That's what we offer as well to predominantly agents and professionals. They're the ones who are most incentivized to create opportunities. So in a few ways, one of the ways is being able to search and filter with advanced filters within our network and subscribing to our product called Connect Pro. And that's being able to say, you know, I'm looking for buyers in Liverpool who want to spend $800,000 or more. And then we'll be able to showcase these users. And then you'll be able to use up your credits, the message credit system, be able to message certain buyers or renters or owners or investors to say, look, maybe I've got a great opportunity here. Maybe it's on market or maybe it's off market, you know, coming to market soon. Would you like to have a look? So I guess it's a more qualified and direct way of targeting the right type of interested buyer or renter, rather than just a blast blanket email to 3,000 emails in your database and hoping that there are five or six people who are matched to that property. You know, we've all been there. We've gotten those emails where you're interested in this area, and then there's 50 properties there. It's like, well, you know, it's probably only two properties. And this is the idea, right? It's like that. And that's why those databases get eroded over time, because they're constantly hammering them with content that's not relevant. But on our platform, they're able to do that. So you can upgrade, subscribe to those. We also have data products as well for agents and property developers to subscribe to. It's fully interactive online, nice charts that they can access that data. We have more products coming out. We're going to have some data subscriptions directly for agents as well, if they want to look at getting nice property reports for any of the properties they have, print it out, maybe give that to their vendor. And we also have some advertising as well in terms of digital ad placements within the platform, within the news feeds, and throughout the ecosystem. And it's a little bit different to paying to list a property, you know, where you might spend, you might consider that a marketing expense as well, but it's, you know, $3,000-$4,000 to kind of do that. But what it does, in my opinion, is it makes the search experience a pay to win model, where if you want to be at the top, you've got to pay more, and then your competitor pays more and gets on top of you, and then someone else pays more. And as you can see, it's this very aggressive competitive nature that your property might be the best property for a potential buyer, but unfortunately it's way down the list because not enough marketing dollars was being pitted against the other agent who's prepared to pay. And from our perspective, that doesn't suit the consumer. Our focus is very much around, what do the buyers and renters want? Let's just give them what they want. They want access to all the properties. So why do we have a barrier, which is a listing fee, to give them what they want? Let's just give it to them and create a business on the back end of that.
Recently, you partnered with Westpac, wasn't it, for home loans? Why did you go down the path of partnering with Westpac for home loans?
Yeah, so our mission is around helping people get into their dream homes. And whilst obviously finding property and finding the research and connecting with people is a clear priority for people to help them find their home, the finance aspect is also very important, right? It's great to know what home is your ideal home, but you need to get the enough money or enough of a mortgage to buy that place. So that really aligned with us in terms of looking at not only the real estate transaction, but the financial aspects. How can we help people get the right finance? And I guess, so we partner with Uno Home Loans, which is Westpac's online broker. And I guess our approach there was, working with the broker is great because the brokers work with multiple lenders. So it's the same kind of philosophy around, they are trying to find you the right lender for your circumstance. It's not necessarily just, you know, let's say pitching Westpac's products, but pitching the right product that's going to suit them. And I guess that really aligns with what we want to do. The good thing is that aligns with what most Australians want to do. You know, more than half of mortgages originating in Australia are through mortgage brokers. It's been actually quite a huge growth over the past 5-10 years in that industry. And I think it's because it suits consumers. You know, as a consumer, it's a free service effectively, and you work with one person to look at multiple lenders rather than going to each individual bank and trying to negotiate the best deal possible and then counter offering and so on.
That's a key part of the ecosystem, I guess, getting a loan to get you into your dream property. Are there any other areas where you might be looking to partner at the moment?
Definitely. So we are looking to announce a data partnership quite soon, and that's going to be a great service to both consumers and agents, where on a lot of properties, most properties that we'll have in our platform, you'll be able to download a free comprehensive report for that. It's probably about 15 pages. It's got a lot of information around, you know, median values, performance of properties in the area, potential sale prices, and then actually even looking to potentially get someone to help you do that, negotiate or find more properties like that, whether they're on or off market. But also productizing that for agents as well to help them when they are, let's say, trying to attract a client, trying to get them over the line, they can search and do some research with our data to get the right estimates for the valuations or look at some past transactions and so on. So that's going to be quite exciting. We'll launch that in a couple of weeks.
Is there ever a chance that you would bring together Airtasker and Soho? For example, this property needs renovating. Can we suggest to you some tradies over here on the other platform?
Absolutely. That's definitely part of our roadmap is actually we want to work with many businesses in the space, not just home services, which is an obvious angle, as you mentioned, around, well, we know you've just moved. Why don't you look at getting some real lists? Here's a great service to use called AirTasker. Or even, for example, when you are looking at a property and you need to get to the inspection time, you know, get there on time, then you can click a button, say, grab an Uber. You know, it's 5 minutes from here to get to where you need to go. So there's definitely a scope for that, and we're looking to launch that. But also looking at broader at working with everyone in the, let's say, prop tech industry, you know, whether it's online payment apps, agent productivity apps like CRMs, you know, email productivity apps, mortgage and finance apps. We want to create this ecosystem, and that's going to be coming next year. And so, again, for consumers and even professionals, being able to go to a single platform that can help you find apps to help you buy or rent properties, but maybe as a professional, apps that help you deliver a better service to your client or help you achieve higher sales. So there's definitely an ecosystem around the apps as well that are going to be launching quite soon.
So it's interesting. There seems to be like a heap of opportunity just sort of kind of around this whole ecosystem thing here. I mean, I'm interested because, like, as a business owner as well, how do you focus on the right idea? Like, how do you focus on, you know, and you've got this amazing background in entrepreneurship. How do you choose the thing which is going to make the biggest difference first?
Yeah, I think it's around identifying some the core objectives for the business, not necessarily for a feature or a product yet. And understand, you know, what are the three things or four things that we want to achieve maybe this year or this quarter? And once you identify those, it makes a lot easier to decide, you know, when you have 10 ideas on the table, how many boxes do each of those ideas tick? And then even if it comes to some kind of, let's say, tiebreaker situation, then understand, you know, which one do you think is more important? You know, and I think it's always having the discipline to say, if you could only do one, which one would you do? Even though maybe you have capacity to do four or five ideas over the quarter, if you could do only one, which one would it be? And that having that mentality helps you focus on what really matters and what you need to achieve over that period. It's not just obviously making a decision as well. It's like once you make that decision, you've got to be committed. You've got to go all the way and make sure that you remember why you're doing that in the first place. It can get very easy to be distracted, even as you're executing on that idea. You think, well, look at all these other 100 things you could do as part of this. So it's always important, I think, to try and write that down as well to understand this is what we wanted to achieve a month ago. This is where we are a month later. Have we ticked our goals? If not, maybe you work at it again. Or if not, maybe you say we didn't achieve it because the opportunity wasn't there. We need to move on to the next thing. So just having that discipline is going to go a long way.
Interesting. If you could give yourself some advice, like after developing AirTasker and developing Soho, are there any challenges that you've had to overcome? And is there any advice you'd probably give yourself 5 years ago that you wish you'd had?
Yeah, the biggest advice, and you know, it's definitely something I'm quite passionate about and I've written about as well, is around the culture of the business. You know, it is something that the first startup I joined, Amazium, very early on, the team took us out. You know, maybe there's only about 8 or 9 people, but they took us out on a 2-day session to talk about culture. And I thought, why are we doing this? What a waste of time. You know, there's only 9 of us here. We see each other every single day. But they had a lot of experience and there was a reason why they did it. I just didn't know at the time. But culture is really important and the values of business, because in the early days, you might have a small team and it may not make sense to spend that time because you think, you know, we see each other every day. It's so easy to make decisions. But the problems start arising when you say have 30 to 100 people, you know, where you're not able to sit down and see everyone in your business every single day and talk to them about problems, right, or opportunities. And that's where you need to have this thing called culture and values in the business that's going to drive that person that you might not speak to for 2-3 weeks as to what are they meant to be doing with their day? You know, what are their priorities? What are their objectives? The values determine how they're meant to do that. You know, we can see examples of where business has grown very fast, but maybe the values weren't clear to people, or maybe they weren't set well. For example, with Uber, you know, Uber is a fantastic business that's really grown and changed the way we think about transport. but the values that they had within that business, we may not agree with, right? They were very aggressive, across a few lines, I think. And that has become a problem at scale. But in the early days, I doubt that was what they were thinking about, right? So in terms of advice, definitely I'll give myself advice that, it's important to think of that as early as possible. It may not seem like a problem today, but, in a few years' time, if your business is successful and growing, it's going to become a problem, but also an opportunity to help your business flourish and thrive with the right mission, with the right culture and the right values in the business.
So you split your time at the moment between Singapore and Australia. Is there anything we can learn in Australia from the market in Singapore? Like, are there any sort of cross-cultural trends that you're seeing in Southeast Asia that you're seeing here as well? Like, where do you see real estate heading in the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Yeah, I would say that there are some things in the Singapore and the Southeast Asia region that are less mature than Australia, and there are some things that are more mature. For example, Australian real estate ecosystem is a very mature, if not one of the most mature sectors in the world. You've got large companies that are very established, very omnipresent across all states. Property values are very high. They're also very stable as well. It's decent regulation, enough to make sure that it's kept in check. So I think it's a very stable economy for real estate. In Singapore and Southeast Asia, it's developing. It's that wealth is probably starting to grow, and then the real estate asset class become more important. So there are less productivity tools, for example, available to agents in the Southeast Asia region, because it hasn't developed that status yet, where it's around optimizing email databases and being able to target specific qualified buyers and so on. It's more around just getting visibility and transparency online for their opportunities. So Australia's kind of been through that. But then there are also some things that are more well thought through and developed in the Southeast Asia region. For example, in Singapore, it's a unique example, but postcodes in Singapore, there's one postcode per building. Postcode is an area, and they don't have multiple names for the same postcode. In the postcode 2000, you've got Sydney, Barangaroo, Dawes Point, Millers Point. Everything has the same postcode, and it's very confusing. Whereas in Singapore, it's more advanced in terms of saying this postcode is this building. So it's very easy to obviously not only deliver posts, but online and searching for properties in this building. Very easy. It's built that way effectively. And so, there are some things that are more advanced, I think, in this region than in Australia.
I remember a couple of years ago being in Singapore and picking up the Singapore Business Review or something like that. I think it was a magazine that was called that. And it happened to be the property edition, which was, a happy coincidence. And I remember reading this article about how that there was a lot of consolidation of real estate businesses in order to remain efficient because, here margins are being squeezed, and I imagine it's not too different over there as well. Is that still what you're seeing over there?
The Singapore market is unique in that it is relatively tightly controlled by the government in terms of what you can and can't buy. They have a few great schemes. They have the what's called a HDB, Housing Development Board scheme, where actually 80% of the properties in Singapore are government built and government managed. So effectively you're living in government housing, and only 20% of the market is actually privately held and can be privately held. So, but that being said, it's not, let's say, undesirable commission housing. It's actually quite well-built, high-quality properties that you get. And effectively, you're buying it with your superannuation, which over here they call the CPF. And it's great because you could buy, a 3-4-bedroom apartment for maybe $300,000. It's a fantastic way to get a roof over your head that's yours. But it's slightly different in that it's a 99-year lease. So it's not effectively full ownership, but it's a great way to give the citizens of Singapore a way to utilize their super to give themselves a home to have. So that's a great scheme. But at the same time, I guess it's less on the investment perspective, right? Because if it's a lease, then how does that work in terms of I put my capital here, does it make me money and so on? So it's quite controlled, and on the other aspects, there is heavy regulations around buying as a foreigner or buying more than one property. There are increasing tiered stamp duties that are considerable that step up as you invest into the sector. For example, I think if you invest as a foreigner into Singapore, you're looking at, I think, in excess of 20% in duties upfront as you buy the property. So yeah, I guess that's where the government has taken a different stance, I guess, to the Australian government in terms of encouraging investment, but also controlling that to a point where it's not potentially create bubble-like behaviour.
It's really interesting. I'm sure we could do another whole interview on that. But I guess just in the interests of time, what's the ultimate goal for you and Soho? Like, what is the grand plan?
I guess for Soho is Australia's a core market for us. We have, you know, some of our team, most of our team in Singapore as well, doing a lot of development and the marketing. But our ambitions is definitely to be a thriving global ecosystem where not only being able to find every single property and connect with any experts that you need within your own domestic industry, a real estate ecosystem, you know, within Australia, but also being able to very easily look at properties around the world, potentially as you move to different countries, also having a very similar experience, a great experience. And I guess that's some of the learnings I've taken away from the rise of companies like Uber, for example, where it wasn't just around a great experience within your city, but you could go to many cities around the world and it's almost an identical experience. It's a great experience as well. And I think with real estate, it's the same. You know, real estate, finding real estate in Australia or the UK or in Singapore, it shouldn't really be that much difference beyond maybe some currency difference and maybe square foot versus square meter. A few very standard filter settings. But I think what you find today is that the experience is completely different in every single country. And a lot of those businesses that are driving those ecosystems are still very much paid classifieds and not necessarily driven to innovate beyond that because it's such a lucrative space. And I think that's what we're trying to do. You know, not to say that I think we definitely would be considered, let's say, a disruption or disruptor to those models. But at the same time, you know, there's opportunity for us to work with them as well together. So it's, I think it's just in the interest of driving the industry forward into a better way. Our view is that once you have that way, you definitely wouldn't want to go back to what we have today. It's very much a once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Absolutely. Well, Jonathan, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for opening up about your strategy to do with Soho and also some of the background to do with Airtasker, which is fascinating. If there was one thing that you could leave our agent listeners with as a piece of advice or one thought that they should remember from listening to all of this, what would it be?
To sign on to Soho. I mean, it's free. It's a great service. We integrate with all the CRMs, all the partners out there. They're well aware of us. So I think for us, it's definitely use us because we've, you know, you can insert Soho into your workflow exactly the same way that you would work with any other online portal out there. But I guess our opportunity is around, you know, there is a lot more proactive opportunity as well within our platform to do, let's say, a lot more targeted prospecting, you know, maybe looking at, let's call it like the $0 marketing strategy that's been pioneered by a few top agents out there. And Soho is a great way to move into that future of how to do that in a way that's cost efficient for both agents and for their clients. So yeah, absolutely check us out, sohoapp.com. And yeah, hope to have more agents working with us.
Yeah, we'll leave some links in the show notes. Jonathan Louie, thank you so much.
Great, thanks for having me.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.